Blog Talk Radio.
Baby, do you understand me now? Sometimes I feel a little mad. But don't you know that no one alive can always be an angel? When things go wrong, joy that's hard to hide, and sometimes it seems that all I have to do is worry, and then you're bound to see my other side. Thoughts like any other one. Sometimes I find myself alone regretting some foolish thing, some little sinful thing I've done. I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Was all the way back to 1964. Originally,
honey, do like this.
What's going on? That was originally aired by Nina Simone. And that was actually on cover.
No. Hold on to.
Came out a couple of years later, and that song's been covered by quite a few artists. So if you're interested, check it out. It's different interpretations, different tempos. Joe Cocker covered it. Cyndi Lauper covered it. So it's quite a few different versions of it out there. Really love that song, because tonight that's what we're talking about. We are a team of voices here on Blog Talk Radio, and this is Off the Rack, and I'm your host, Raconteur. And it's brought to you by A.P. Taylor himself. And we got him on the line, and we'll invite him on in a couple minutes. I'm just going to get a little rambling done about the topic tonight. We're talking about embroidery of words, embroidery, embellishment, enhancements, however you want to put it. It's not what you say, it's how you say it. And, you know, that's always been a big thing, and I think that relates well to the song, too. Because you know, people tend to attach feelings to words, and you know, sometimes just the words that you choose make a very big difference in how the words are taken, and which is why text messages are such a pain in the butt, because there's no inflection. So you know, you make a joke or you say something and someone takes it the wrong way, that's it, you get ghosted, you never hear from them again. So here we are tonight. We've got poetry that hopefully reflects that, because it's to me too. It's a little like working out, because you know we tend to have an affinity for words. It's like working out. You know, we get used to saying things in a certain manner and saying pretty words, saying them in a different way, and that's how we get used to speaking. And you know, it just becomes second nature. So I love that idea associated with speaking. We've got a couple of people on the line and a lot of poetry to read tonight, I think. So let's get the ball rolling. I got my buddy Pretty Birds on the line watching the studio for me tonight trying to make me look good. Hi, Pretty Bird.
Hey. So do you want to introduce everybody? We also have Wayne online, or do you want me to go ahead and do it?
No, you go ahead. I'm sure they'd rather hear your voice.
I don't know about that. But, okay, in order, we have Miss Sky. Say hello.
Hello.
And we have the man himself, Mr. A.P. Taylor. Hello, hello.
Oh, hi, Pretty Bird.
Well, hello there. And we have the very devilish and very fabulous Miss Sweet Pea. Hello, hello.
Well, hello, hello.
Oh, see, that's the voice. That's the one. And and we have Mr. Wayne. Good evening, Mr. Wayne. How are you?
Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
Back to you, Rex.
And puppy dog.
Yes. We're running a kennel also, so
they have been muted.
Muted and neutered. Anyways, oh man. So let's jump right into it. I've got one poem to start with that I was thinking of that just specifically speaks to the word choices and things like that. And if Ms. Sky will read that for me tonight.
I certainly will. This is it on the – I didn't –
It is on the board.
Okay. This is Chosen Word by Raconteur. We have the dictionary and thesaurus available to read, infinite websites to browse until our eyes practically bleed. But to combine the specific words to convey emotions that might comfort you somehow, some way, I need only consult my heart and view things as you did from the very start. Because if I do, my words could touch your heart, soothe your soul, and give our lives a brand new start. The words are there, they could fill a book, but so much more remains unspoken. I need to take a second look. So I gaze into your eyes, and it's not your pain, but me that I see. Thus I am rendered speechless, my heart melted, and all the words I could choose scattered at my feet like so much debris. And pump.
I love the very idea of that. Of where just a glance, well, a glance can entice, a glance can enrage, and a glance can render you speechless, which is saying something if you're as verbose as I am, because I never shut up. And I love that because it's true. You know, those moments just stop you cold when it's full of love and full, it catches you off guard. And it's those rare moments that kind of put you in the present, in that kind of place where you like kind of see behind the veil, behind the mundane, everything. It's the pouring out of emotion in a glance, and I love that you put that in there. And when you start this with, we have the dictionary and thesaurus. I have issues with the thesaurus. Not that, you know, my issues or anybody else's problem, but I'm saying anyway. I don't think that people understand the nuance and the art of how to properly use a thesaurus, because so many people just want to throw words that are similar, but similar is not equal to. So they go hand in hand. You need to look for your similar word and then go to the dictionary and make sure that it actually means what it almost means, because then you don't sound like an idiot throwing weird words that are supposed to almost closely resemble something else. And that's how you use a thesaurus for those out there who have no clue and just think all the words are the same, because there's a lot of them. So, you know, now I'm hoping that somebody can expand their lexicon. That's just my little rant because I feel some kind of way. But I really and enjoy this, where, you know, you don't need to look for the meaning of things. You just trust how you feel, you know, and that's saying something in and of itself as well, because that's not the easiest thing to do. Most of us second guess ourselves with emotions, and especially if a relationship is new. It's like, well, you know, when you don't know the subtleties of their personality, the quirkiness, which of which I have many, so it takes a hot minute to know me, where I tend to be snarky. But I grew up with my family showing love with full-on insults and booty rubs. Everybody rubs each other's butt in my family. We're not weird. It's fine. And so so if we, like, jive at each other, if somebody brings somebody over, and we tend to treat everybody like family because if they're loved by one, they're loved by all, and we start letting it fly, you know, I'm usually the one that has to stop and be like, this is normal. This is good. If we are not making fun of you, yeah, it's a problem. And so I kind of love that, you know, you need to consult your heart, you know, so you can see things, because it's hard to trust what you don't know and or what you think they might feel, or how you put people, and not you in particular, but you as in society as a whole. We tend to think people might react in the worst possible way, because we like to steel ourselves against that kind of pain. And we don't do anybody, you know, justice doing that, because most of the time people are not our worst case scenario. It's just that one in like 2,400,050 that screws us all up. But I absolutely love the feeling in this and the ideas that with all of those words, sometimes silence conveys it best. And that is fabulous. So, Miss Sky, since you read it, what are your thoughts?
I thought it was kind of something. What I call it, like, the in and out flow, and the rhyme kind of snuck up on you, actually, for me, because there's not like a, some people when they do rhyme, they're very contained in their lines. You know, they're the same length, or they're kind of together. And this was kind of just very fluid. And so because of that, because of the longer lines and they're a little bit uneven, it kind of sneaks up on you, but it flows wonderfully all the same. So I really liked that about it. It was a little bit of a surprise. And I liked the idea of, the words are there. They could fill a book. I mean, we all have these words. And yet, and there's two ways that I personally internalize this with, but so much more remains unspoken. I need to take a second look. I don't know if this is what you meant, but I know Iraq is very good at, like, double meanings. And the way that I took it was, you know, reading between the lines, even when you're using words. And a lot of us write in poetry a lot of stuff that we may not even talk about in life. I mean, at least I do. I think you guys know me actually better than people that see me every day. So that whole thing. But then you get down to the last section, Mark, and you start talking about gazing in the eyes, and it's not your pain, but me that I see. And I really feel like when I read poetry myself, and hopefully when others read poetry, we see pieces of ourselves in the poetry. You know, somebody might put up a poem and they're like, well, you know, and I think you said it the other day, Pretty Bird, you know, you write for you, and if nobody connects with it, that's just for you. And then you've got all these people that are saying, oh, I really connect with this poem. I've been there. I understand this feeling. I'm so glad someone else could put it into the words that I couldn't, or this way that I wasn't able to, or I just respect the way that you did it. All these different things. When you see yourself and other people's poetry and there's that familiarity and there's that connection. And I think it's a beautiful thing. One of the most beautiful things about poetry. And I like that you put that in there. Really well done.
And AP, your thoughts?
Well, I love the words about connection. And I also love the fact that when you have a connection with somebody, that those words sort of just seem to be insufficient and they sort of get dashed against your feet a little bit. And that's particularly if you can see that a person has had a tough day or you know, is going through some stuff, because words don't seem to be enough in that situation, and they sort of feel meagre and small. But it's not what you say, but how you say it. And even though it sort of feels meagre and small, it actually can be incredibly meaningful for that person if they're in a space which is tough. And I think you picked that up really well in this piece, right?
Thanks, Nancy.
And Miss Sweet, your thoughts? Are you muted, Sweet?
No, the dogs are muted.
Yeah, exactly. Dogs are muted. I'm just trying to keep quiet. I like the whole part of it doesn't matter what words I say because I listen to my heart. I think that's probably the most beautiful part of the whole thing. I think that words are just words on page unless they're stealing. And I believe that no matter what you're writing, even if it's something as simple as your business, because even if you're just getting, you know, and the market went up 25% or the market went down 45%, somebody receiving that information is going to have some kind of reaction. So even though it's just words on a page, it's going to affect someone. And granted, there's only so many ways you can say the market collapsed, but the idea that there's going to be emotion attached to it is that's how powerful words are. So I really like that part that it's going to be about your heart. It's going to be about what's written. It's going to be received or written in a certain way. And I think people forget that, you know, whatever the dictionary or the thesaurus is, whatever we read or whatever we receive or whatever we write, it's going to be received somehow with emotion. I think that's the most important thing that I got from what you were saying.
Absolutely.
And Wayne, what are your thoughts on Rackspace?
Well, I said, when it comes to the ladies, I have short words all over the place. And I was too scared to pick them up. I once got bit by the car because speaking, because speakers. I was pretty bored with my booty. There I go again. You got right.
Well, I just did that one to myself, didn't I? Oh, my goodness. And we have Hatter on the line. Say hello, hello.
Hello, 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 hello.
Were you able to, did you have a chance to read Rack's poem?
No, I didn't know which one you were talking about.
Ah, no worries. Rack, it is your show, so back to you.
All right, let's let AP read next, because he usually, I know he's stemming, but, you know, I always enjoy AP's work.
But I am sticking around. I know it's strange, but I am. So let me get my piece here.
Got it.
So you can put it up on the board. Oh, you've got it. You've got it ready.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. This is embellishment, and goes a little bit like this. You can embroider about any object supplied with a needle and thread and energy applied. So the question not if, but instead rather why start? Within all that effort, what message impart? For embellishment can establish an older bar higher, and once that's in place, have set barbed wire. Pierced once achieved, a sharp iron of even more. Stories keep growing by their own saw. Till reality leave behind, all that remains is smoke. For the whole edifice to fall, what takes is a poke. So exaggeration I avoid, plus extravagance blade. Where a knife's edge awaits, once you start to braid. And pull.
Oh, I like that. It's you know, again, our choice of words sometimes, like I say, it becomes second nature to speak of things in a grandiose fashion. And sometimes it feels like, you know, especially if people don't know you, that you're leaving the truth behind. And you know, that goes to the idea of the opening song about being misunderstood. Some people just want to blame the emotion, or, you know, it's like, how could you think that? How could you think that? But, you know, clearly you knew what you were trying to say. You know, it's just how the people take it sometimes. It really, they run away with the words, you're really just trying to keep on topic and describe what's going on. So, I guess the lines sometimes blur, and you know, I don't know. It gets to be a confusing mess. I really like this piece. Wayne, what'd you think?
Well, I started my comment, but I said the question not if, but instead rather why start. That's my sentiments exactly. And so that's about as far as I got to get ready to do. Tell you something stupid, but I haven't got around to it yet. So anyway, it's a great poem. I enjoyed it. Good job. I think it's a key poem. I like it.
Thanks, Juan.
And Hatter, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, it was this big. I swear it was.
Yeah.
It's what a web we weave. When is it acceptable? Is it ever acceptable to embellish?
Well,
question.
Fishing.
It depends on if you're under oath and you know how far away you stray from the truth. Because you know an embellishment could still be on topic. It's just you know, your interpretation of events or your description of you know, he caught that fish with the barbed wire, you know.
Darling, I swear I'm only 44 years old, and don't you dare ask me if I'm a day old.
There you go.
So. Politicians are allowed to lie to you, except in Congress. So that would be one.
Yes.
Yeah. Very good, JP.
No. Thanks, Heather.
How about you, Sweet?
I'm quite. Let's just say exaggerations are something that we can turn into perceptions, because an exaggeration may just be a perception of the situation. For what I see as quite small, one may see as quite large, depending on the distance from the objection or object what one sees. For from down under, one may see something going left, while from my perception, I may see something going right. Or I cannot believe that AP put in writing that an Aussie would not exaggerate the size of something or the grandioseness of something. Or I have sat and served several Australian officers in a club on Schofield Barracks and Pearl Harbor, and I can say that a drunk Australian officer tends to have a different perception of the world. So I would not say exaggeration, perhaps, as perceptions of things that they can do over others. So maybe it's not exaggeration. Maybe it's an extravaganza of their grandiose perceptions. But that is why they're fun.
Yeah, you have to admit, when you're talking about, like, a giant spider in Australia, it's different than talking about a giant spider anywhere else.
I would agree.
Yeah.
But I love the whole thing, AP, as you know I do. Your verbiage and your language and your slight underhand of
listen to me over here while I'm saying something over there is always priceless.
This is a knife.
Can I say two things, Brad, in response? Two things. Firstly, I think what Sweet is talking about is the effect of parallax, where something happens to be bigger if it happens to be closer. That's my first comment. Second comment is, I was actually waiting for my son to pick me up and take me out to Japanese on Sunday. And I was next to this delivery van, and I was sort of thinking, oh, I'll just sort of lean against the delivery van while I'm waiting for him to pick me up. And you just have to be vigilant in Australia, because I had a look down at the delivery van, and I was back at the restaurant, and they're sitting on the bloody side wing mirror was an inch wide redback spider, and I thought to myself, I'm glad I looked.
Oh my God, yes. I have no doubt of everything that you see and the stories that you tell me. The Christmas tree steak was enough to make me a believer of everything you say. But I'm just saying, perception is the same, perhaps, versus exaggeration.
Guy, where do you stand on parallax?
Well, I wasn't really going there. You know, I think the key thing to take away from this is towards the end. So I avoid exaggeration. And I think when you start weaving, so I'm of two minds. So when you're writing, I do think that sometimes people as writers piece together different stories, like they could either pick from themselves or they can have empathy to other people's stories, and then create and embroider poetry through versions of their own truth and versions of the truth that they know from others that they've experienced firsthand or have seen secondhand or have, have had experience secondhand. And then perhaps even put them into fiction. And when you're writing, I think a lot of authors do that, and that is writing. I think in day-to-day, I think I pretty much stay by AP's his closing stanza about avoiding extravagances and embellishments, because I think it is a slippery slope. And once you start, the thing about lying, really, is that when you start to do it little by little bit, you start to, because they're so small, you're saying, oh, well, it's harmless. And then you start to believe it yourself, and then you forget what the truth is. So, I have to agree with the closing stanza, unless it's in a setting of creation. And then if you're creating, it's something different. But I like how you put it in there. And obviously, it created a lot of conversation and a lot of thought. Well done, AP.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
I want to say, in relation to the song, the line about, I'm just a soul whose intentions are good, again, as writers, sometimes you do it to make a point. It's really like you say, that slippery slope, that you have to understand where the person's coming from and what they're trying to do. In the piece, is it satire, or is it a legal document that they're betting the house on it? Wait, did I get you yet?
What if your reputation precedes you?
Yes.
That's also a bad thing too. What was it? Who said it? Damn it. I keep wanting to say Walt Whitman. What was his name? To be misunderstood is to be greatness is to be misunderstood.
Wadsworth. Thoreau.
Emerson, no?
Ralph Waldo Emerson, yeah. Yes.
Emerson. Ah.
Great greatness is to be misunderstood. So, yeah. anyway. Wayne, did I get to yet?
Well, I didn't finish my comments a while ago, so I can finish now. I can finish the comment if you'd like me to.
Yes, please.
Okay, I said the question not, but instead rather why start? That is my sentiment exactly. And once that in place has set by bar. No, I'm not sure what I'm talking about, but I will embellish till reality leave behind the whole and dice, or at least half of it. Great job, AP.
Thank you, Wayne.
Yeah, let's see. What do we got up next?
Well, I'm hoping to have a comment.
Oh, I took it for granted. I'm sorry. Yes.
Just forget about me. It's fine.
No,
yes.
I thought you already commented.
No. Just sitting here, you know, waiting patiently. That last stanza especially is the very reason why I don't lie. I'm too lazy to try to remember all the stuff. And you can't. You know, everything seems to snowball. And I don't believe in, like, little white lies because nothing's harmless. Deceit is deceit. I'm very odd in that I have everything on an even, like, everything's even to me. Like, you can lie about murdering somebody, or you could lie about who finished drinking the orange juice. The untruth is the untruth, and so I'm not extremely fine. But I love this, how when you start, you can embroider just about any object supplied with a needle and thread and energy applied. You know, that is true. And when it comes to poetry, though. I think that by design, it's a little flouncy, you know? If you wanted to read somebody, you know, talking straight, then that's just about absolutely everybody. And so, you know, lyrically, metaphorically, and whatnot, isn't necessarily, if you're telling a story through poetry, is it necessarily embellished or exaggerated? No, but it is very, very pretty and wonderfully embroidered because nobody likes it straight. And, well, they do, but it's just not as good a story. And so I don't look at an embroidery of words, which I love that term, by the way, as anything other than, you know, telling a better story, you know? If I'm like, yeah, some dogs chased me home, that's different than saying I almost died because I fell flat on my face in the middle of traffic outrunning this pit bull that got out of somebody's yard. I mean, if it's all true, it's all true, but one's a better story. Even because it just has more detail. You know what I mean? So I enjoy that. I enjoy people putting in the effort to tell the story. And I like it when they don't leave a whole lot out. Not that I need to know the color of the car that almost hit them and things like that. But, you know, that's not embellishment to me. That fish, you know, Charlie, that giant bass, that was, you know, 9 inches if it was a day, is that's different. But if you're doing something and you're getting joy in doing something and you get more joy out of telling these tales that you know nobody's really going to believe, and if they ask you outright, you're like, yeah, no, it was like this big, you know, then, you know, that has its own fun. And that has to do with the personality of who's telling that story. But generally speaking, to me, a lie is a lie is a lie is a lie. And I'd rather have the straight up truth. I don't care how ugly it is. You know what I mean? So I really love the way you put this, where it's all how you weave that tapestry. And, you know, when it's as tall as a building, all you have to do is poke it and it's going to come crumbling down, and then what are you going to do? Because you can't keep anything straight, you know? So very well done. And let's say hello to Miss Deborah Lee. Hey, Deb, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Wonderful.
We're having fun with words tonight.
Yeah, I used the phrase cock and bull story, and they labeled my poem adult, so I hear you.
Oh, my goodness. What kind of farm were they raised on?
I know, right?
Oh, my goodness. I went ahead and I put sweet up, Rack, whenever you're ready to go to the next poem.
Okay. Sweet, the microphone is yours.
The other poem.
What other poem?
I'm searching up there.
Oh, there is. My bad.
That's okay. That's
so
the old one.
That.
I was going to...
This is the new one.
That's a good
Here
poem.
We go.
Yeah. Okay. This is A Sleeping Dragon, a complete embellishment. Born into the bondages of misconception, the fragilities of femininity failed her before to be schoolgirl. Giggles could be mastered into womanly wilds. Red-hot cinnamon candy curls flaunted the destruction around her deep chocolate bedroom eyes, watching a castle where the sleeping dragon resides. Sleeping softly on concrete stone, slipping on pebbles loose between her toes, stepping past into her fairy tale woes, to the castle's third tower, her mind did float. Once upon a time, a dragon slayer came. He proclaimed he destroyed all her pain, bragged to all about his love. But in the end, she a fool, and he the jester playing pretend. Years and years of fear bound her to fate. Love and joy had no place. Rats chewed upon the bodies of her hate. Light had forsaken this forsaken place. So in your travels, you find a castle with a sleeping dragon. Just keep walking, for he is watching over here, killing dragon slayers who claim to love away her shame. End poem. Completely.
Wow.
Embellishment.
Wow, that's beautiful. And you know that's what we're talking about. You tell the story and you stick to the storyline and. You know, that line between truth and everything else, you use metaphor in a beautiful way, and you definitely make your point. and again, relatable and emotional and, you know, all those other fun things that I love to attach to your words. Good done. Sweet. Deb, did you want to comment first?
Oh, sure. Sweet, I love that you pulled out your crayons for this one with your red hot cinnamon curls and your deep chocolate bedroom eyes. Great, great, great details. I love the opening line, too, born into the bondages of misconception. What a fabulous line. I like all the little nuances that hint at the, I guess, untruth. Slipping on pebbles loose between her toes, stepping past into the fairy tale woes. Once upon a time, a dragon slayer came and he proclaimed he destroyed all her pain. If he had to proclaim it, obviously it wasn't true. So I love the wording on all the BS that you were fed during that fairy tale. And I like... where's the part about the castle? The castle. I thought I saw a castle.
Oh, yeah. She thought she saw a castle, too.
Well, okay, down at the end there, you find a castle. I get the reference to that castle because of past things that you've written. So I like that you put that in there, especially when slaying the dragon. So... I think you did a really clever job with this one.
Thank you.
Wayne, what'd you think?
Well, I said I could breathe fire right now. Your voice is so hot there, sweet. I almost chewed upon the bodies. I'm not saying anything else. I want me a red hot cinnamon and curls girl. I think you told it yourself. That's a great line there. Good job.
Thank you.
And Hatter, what'd you think?
Say Hatter?
Yes, sir.
Reminded me of Dragons Live Forever, but not so little boys. Poor Puff, Jackie Paper. It's a good tale. That's the closest I can think of the dragon protecting somebody. Very good, Sweet Pea.
Thank you, Hatter.
Yeah.
Hey, can you come up to Sweet real quick?
Yeah, look, it's cute because fairy tales are all embellishment, of course. And and there's books and volumes and years of words of fairy tales. And so I'd like to think sometime I'd find a castle, and if there was a sleeping dragon there, I'll take your advice and keep walking, sweet.
Very good.
And Sky?
Yeah, I kind of going to totally go Harry Potter on you, but it reminds me of, like, Professor Lockhart. You know, he has all these books about all these tales and things that he's defeated, and, you know, it's just the only thing he can do is he can play with people's memories. So other people do all these great things, and then he changes their memory, and then they think that he did it. He messes with their memory. So then he's going around collecting all the fame. It kind of reminded me along the lines the same as that, like go around boasting all these things when in truth, it's just not the case. I like the setting that you put in here. I love, obviously, the fantasy of the dragon and the dragon slayer. And I don't know, it's just right up my alley for fantasy. Really well done. Thank you.
And Pretty Bird, you get the last word on this one.
Okay. So I love that this is framed in a fairy tale. Regardless of the underlying truths in it, where the embellishment comes in, if there is no hint of underlying truth, this reads like a wonderful fairy tale, which is, you know, fiction. The fact that this is woven around whatever is woven around is quite stunning, because there is pain in this. But there is, and there's pain, and there's fear, and there's darkness, but it doesn't read that way, which you're really excellent at doing, by the way. Just, it's one of those things that I look forward to whenever I hear you read, because I prefer hearing you read than me reading yourself, because it's just different. And so I love that you do that. I do. And and you have this thing for dragons, which there is... which I find interesting, because you have a soft spot for dragons, yet perhaps, you know, maybe not here. And so I love that. I love that this is a story within a story, and it's subtle enough that it reads like a fanciful fairy tale. So fabulous, fabulous, fabulous.
But the point is that you know me personally, so you know the underlying story.
Yes.
So how many would?
Nobody. Not a single person.
Right.
And yet it still stands on its own is the point,
it
though.
It's fabulous.
You got shows coming up, Sweet, that you want to push?
I do. I have a Thursday night show called The October Vibe. What's your October vibe? Is it about monsters? Is it about fall? Is it about, you know, anything like that? Warm nights, long nights, what are you getting? What are you getting from October? Any kind of vibe about October? Some people like the fall. Some people hate daylight savings. Some people like the frost in the morning. I know AP's getting ready to go into the hottest time of the year. He's in a heat wave. Just what's your October vibe? Is it pumpkin spice? Even though we've been dealing with that since June. Anything, you know? And then on Sunday night, I have Murder and Mayhem with JCA, which is very exciting. Check that out. There are some great little video shots in there about some of the worst Black Widow killers. One of them
from Australia, I might add, who pretty much wanted to skin, well, she skinned her husband and decided to feed his head to her adult children. So the first female killer that was sent to the, I believe it was the gas chamber or something like that. Yeah. Out of Australia, so we'll be covering her too. So Murder and Mayhem on Sunday night and your October Vibe on Thursday night.
Awesome. All right. Deb, do you need to read and run? I know Sky's got a clock that she's watching too.
If Sky needs to go first, that's cool.
I just want to make sure she gets read because.
Yeah, no. If she needs to go, that's cool. I can go after her.
Well, 11 o'clock, 11-ish. I would like to go to bed about 11-ish. So, all right. So I'm not actually going to read this poem. So there's the thing. So I am going to read the author's notes because when I thought about, I mean, I was thinking a whole hour for you. Like, I was just racking my brain, not to say a pun, but about what I was going to bring for you. And what I thought was that, so this poem was this poem was written for a Poetic Slice of Life show. So within the last 2 years, or three years, I think they've been on. And it was for an American Horror Story show. So it was supposed to parallel the characters in the picture that's posted, and these two characters. So it was supposed to parallel their story. But if you want to talk about embroidering, I do this a lot. I pretty much use the wealth of my writing. But so in the poem, which I know you've heard before, Rack, so it's despite the rot in my chest, I still wanted you to love dead things. So what I often do, sometimes I do, with longer poems and things like this, before I started writing for, like, shows and stuff like that, my writing was my writing, personal writing, you know, for me. And I have a lot of, I mean, I've been writing for 23 years, so I have a lot of brevities. I have a lot of just brevity, like, lines all over the place. And what I started to do was I started to gather some of those lines and create bigger pieces. So this piece is written of fiction, right, because it's a fictional piece, because it's written for a show for American Horror Story. But the lines within them were not written as fiction when I wrote them, some of the lines. Mm-hmm. And then I took those lines, and then I added more lines, and then I put them together because they were separate poems. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read you the series of smaller poems, which are very short. It will be the length of one poem. And then, you know, at your leisure, you can go back and see how I put it together. But this is probably the most embroidering that I do. I do it quite a bit. I'll take things from old pieces, and I'll put them in, even in my pieces that are based on character rights. So people may think they're reading fiction, but they're actually not. It's just twisted into fiction. So this is, well, I'm just going to read them down. Dead Things, 2014. And it's cliche to say the rot, the organic matter dying in my chest. Is it cliche to say despite the rot, the organic matter dying in my chest, I still wanted you to love dead things. Wishes, 2014. I once had them, you know, like dressed up dreams before time made them die, those little deaths that soil the soul. A Wallpaper of Daffodils, 2014. There are phonetics bruised into palate, like a wallpaper of daffodils, toxins conditioning, making me believe I needed you to love all those dead things I had become. The stories written of your shadow, 2014, when deaf tongues could sing no more, all the little slits of I'm sorry, the ones you bore gossamer gowns of blame, despite the filed teeth that tucked themselves in the creases of your palms, I could finally see with clarity the stories of your shadow. Beautiful Things, 2014. And this is where the even the I and the she were switched out. She had been drowning in the spit of daddy's bile her whole life, a man with a unique appetite. So you see, when I found her, she was already empty of beautiful things. A sorry life of collected tunes. She was like a wounded animal, cold in separating rooms, just a sorry life with collected tunes that learn not to waste tears on silent, sentimental things like kindness. And last, molasses 2013, you ram coined phrases down insecure lungs, bricks of molasses that poison. And series of poems. So if you ever have short lines, keep them, because you might be able to collect them into something different. So there you go.
Wow, that's amazing. I want to say, I'm pretty sure Deb does something similar to that. I know Sweet Pea kind of did that too. So I'll let Deb comment first.
I can't believe you just said that, Rack. While she was reading, and then she started saying about how if you ever have pieces, I have like half a dozen drafts, and they're packed with pieces. And Sky, you've now inspired me to go dig through those half a dozen folders for my pieces and see what I can do with them, because this is really, really cool.
Knit them together.
Yeah, and sometimes, like I remember one time I wrote this little brevity, and I rarely, you know, have strong feelings about my own, but there's this one, I liked it so much that I turned around and took the little tiny brevity and wrote a whole big poem, and the brevity was actually a toast. It's just like, wow, I'm blown away by all the bits and pieces and, the inspiration to go and dig into mine now. Very cool, Cher.
Thank you. Yeah, these were pulled, like, I think 6 years later, so it was a while. I didn't ever pull them until I started, started pulling them.
Is Sweet still with us?
Yes, I am. I think it was not even 2 weeks ago that you and I and Prebird were hanging on the phone, and I just said, oh, my God, can you believe all these drafts we have? And I was just reading random lines in my draft, and we were talking about, oh, yeah, where am I going to put this or what am I going to put this together? And we started talking about, weaving some of these together or saying, okay, well, this would go into a really cool poem about that, and let's add this line or that line. And I think we came up we talked about, oh, and I started putting a poem together right then and there. And, we kind of all talked about that whole topic together. And I talked about, I've done that a couple times where I'll randomly write something or I'll think of something. I'll throw it in my draft file and then come up with various poems, because sometimes the weirdest things come in my head. And I'll be, I have to write that down. And then 3 or 4 months later, it's just in my draft file, and I'll be like, where did that come from? But, this is going to fit somewhere. And I find that place later on, and I think that's really brilliant. And just great minds think alike there, Sky.
Yeah, I mean, you've done that in your comments before, too, Sweet, on someone else, like you're reading AP or Hatter.
No.
Deb does it too, where you'll take like one line or a couple of lines or pieces of lines I think we've both kind of threaded and embroidered things like that. That's a great take on the idea of embroidering not just of words, but of entire conversations. That was why I was kind of saying, Deb, that you've done it before, because you've taken Hatter's poems and AP's poems and words from each one and threaded them together to make something totally new. Mm-hmm. And Sweet Pea especially, when she'll read one of AP's pieces and she'd be like, if you just go down and you take the first word of each whatever, and she, it's a lovely way to look at things. Great comment. I'm sorry. I'm taking up too much time because we've got a full house here and I need to move on. AP, can you comment, please?
Yeah, I love the ideas
of grabbing bits and pieces that sit out on their own and putting them together. And because oftentimes, you know, what do they say, 1 + 1 = 3. And here we had, you know, pieces that sort of built on each other in really interesting ways, and it was a great way of putting it together. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Hannah, can you comment?
I somehow got lost. I don't know what was read. I was trying to follow Sky, but I couldn't find anything. Posted it. So I walked away for a minute, and I couldn't catch up. Sorry.
No worries. No worries. Wayne.
Yes. You put this together pretty well there, Sky. It's sad. What's worse than sad, it's emotional. It's a wonderful poem, and you read it with such emotion. It sounded like an autobiography, a poetic autobiography. And you did a great job with this. I don't know what to say, but it's a wonderful, wonderful job and heartbreaking. Good job.
Thank you, Ray.
Pretty Bird.
I find it interesting that the little thoughts, these little beautiful etchings you have that are in the main poem, are the exact parts of the poem that made it to my front page. Like, it's just like all of the best parts are these little truths, these little moments of these little snapshots of emotion, because they feel very real to me. I mean, I have no clue where they were born, but that first time especially really just gets to me. It gets to me, which is why I just love everything you do. So let me just shut up about that. But and is it cliche to say that despite the rot, the organic matter dying in my chest, that I still wanted you to love dead things? And when you come up with something like that, it's a painful thing. But you know that it weighs. You know that it has value. And I think that anybody who writes, and it doesn't matter if they write poetry, if they write prose, if they write whatever the heck they write, writers tend to have a notebook or a note file on their phone that has little blurbs of thoughts or things that they want to remember or things they want to write about later. And it's lovely that you have all of these beautiful emotional moments that you were able to just, you know, embroider into something bigger. But how lovely is that? So excellent, excellent, excellent.
It's just the environment. She recycles.
Well, so these are older. Almost, I think I just joined AP maybe that year, maybe 14, 15, I think. So Pretty Bird was right. These were more personal poems that have been ever. So the thing that I was saying was that you could even, people can embellish the truth, but they could also mask the truth by creating a fictional story, but using actual lines that were written from a place of truth. And I often do that, even in my character writes. So I take those pieces and I do those things, and I think that is a different way to embroider your own self into a fictional character or story. If you don't want to put it all out there, but I mean, this one I did, but I chose to, because I thought it would, I was thinking, and I was like, well, this is what I'm going to do. But thank you so much. And yes, thank you.
And you've got shows to push to.
Oh yes. Yes, I do. What am I doing? I'm doing a lot of things. All right. So Wednesday, tomorrow, we are celebrating practical magic. You can write to any of the theme scenes, characters, and or quotes. It'll be the first storyboards that have hopped over to a team of voices. I am really like, you can go anywhere you want. Even if you use a quote and you use a quote and it's not even on topic to the topic itself, I am so like, just bring a poem and relate it to something. And that goes on at 8. And then I'm also on Friday with storyboards again. And I'm starting spooky season early. So we're also doing Death Becomes Her, which I just love that film. I don't know. It's just crazy. So same thing, same rules. And that's on at 8, too. And, yeah, that's it. Perfect timing, 11 o'clock. You're great, guys. Thanks. Perfect timing.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, I guess that brings us to you, Debs.
You are
and then
on.
Wayne.
Okay.
Wayne, you could go next.
What?
No, after Deb's done, Wayne, I think we'll do you next.
That's cool.
Okay, this is called All Hail the King of Exaggeration. Here we go. As the world spins on its axis just for you, it rotates around the marble pedestal that you prop yourself upon, applauding the reflection that you spy in the bathroom mirror, then canonizing yourself. Once you finish with the lotion and potion rigmarole and the pumped-up prepping just for a boost, you wink at the reflection and then you grin. Puffing up your chest, you suck in your gut, flashing the stenciled six-pack from the spray-on tan bottle without breathing, holding it in to snap a selfie. Now you slip into black leather platform shoes. You strut out the doorway and down the stairs, head into your little red sports car and whisper, "Hello, baby," to it, then jump in it and drive to the restaurant. Once seated at the table in the back corner, my brain pictures the car as you spin yarns, adding inches to your height. About the length of the fish you caught out on your yacht, too. Can you call a dinghy a yacht? And my head turns to the side to roll my hazel green eyes and hide my snigger from hearing the cock and bull story you utter, with brown lines dripping down your forehead, sweating off the spray can hair color spritzed on the bald spot tucked underneath the comb-over pompadour. This dog and pony show leaves an aftertaste. So in my boots, made for walking, I excuse myself to powder my nose, hit the exit, and phone Uber. Tossing the burner phone, then ghosting you. And poem.
Oy. Wow. The whole dating scene. Oh my goodness. The idea of that being embellishment and tying in the idea of the fish story too to that. That's sheer genius. I really love that. wow. You know. I almost want to tell you, it's your own fault people want to flirt with you and forget that you're married when you write stuff like that, because it sounds like you're inviting dates, but you're not. Yeah, a lot of what we write is fiction, but, yeah, the exaggeration of some of what we write, you bring that into the thoughts into this, too. Very well done, Deb. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Raconteur.
Let's start with you, Hatter. What'd you think of Deb's date?
Talking about me. yeah, the braggart, right? The braggart.
The bragger, the
first
faker, the
narcissist.
When they confuse that with the first impression needs embellishment. I think you go wrong there. This is very well descriptive in that manner. I mean, I got it. This dog and pony show leaves an aftertaste. So you
thanks,
Heather.
Someone's got a pony, huh? AP, what'd you think?
Look, I love the reaction, actually. I love the aftertaste in the boots, which were made for walking, and so hit the exit and grab the Uber. I love the description of the falsehood, but I love the reaction even better.
Thanks, EP.
Wayne, can you comment?
Yes, I can. I can't believe a man can be so egotistical. You should catch a ride in my plane and visit my mansion on the island. You know I named Alan after myself. Who else got a name after? I only kissed my beamer a few times. This is a wonderful poem, Deb, and I got embellishment all over my face. Thank you.
Thank you, Wayne. Appreciate it.
CP.
She must be mooted.
I am mooted. First off, I want to know where he got his tan, because I know people that can help him out.
Tan the can.
Tan in the pan. I got better tanners than that. But I've dated this guy.
Idea.
You know, I swear I have. I might have even married him once, but that's a long time ago. I don't know what to tell you. Don't file taxes with him. It's a little scary. I tell you what, there are so many male and females of this type. I there should be an island for them. I just love all your descriptions. I think this is hilarious from top to bottom. I don't know. I just don't know what to tell you, because there's so much truth in a lot of people that I see in here. And then I see a lot of people that called the Kardashians that remind me of this poem. It just amazes me. This is brilliant, Deb. Absolutely brilliant.
Thank you, my sweet.
Hi there, Melvin.
And Pretty Bird.
Oh, just crack me up. I'm like, I too love that there's enough self-respect to be like, oh, no, just no, and you disappear. because you know, there's a big faction of people that would just be polite to be polite and before you've had enough. And so, good for you sneaking out whatever the back door is. See you later, bye. And that forethought for the burner phone was fabulous. But I love this with all of the exaggerated inches, and I had to giggle. I couldn't even hold that one in. That was just too stinking funny. And I kind of hate that they made you change cock and bull, because that would have been freaking fabulous. Like, that would have been perfect. But,
oh, no, I left it. I left it in there.
I got dog and pony. Where's the cock and bull?
The cock and bull is
the end, 3/4 of the way down.
Damn, you're good. It's in the second to the last stanza, third line.
Oh, there it is. All right. Good. Because that's exactly what that is. You know, you never trust a guy who cares more about his car than, you know, you, because that's not okay. It's just not okay. But I love this. I love this. It reminds me of the overdone movie characters from like the 1970s, with like all the buttons open, the 60 gold chains, all the chest hair that I think is fabulously sexy out there for the world to see. Not that chest hair is unsexy, but not when they're wearing that outfit with the polyester butterfly collar and the sunglasses and that giant, you know, 1970s mustache. This is what this feels like to me. I know that it's not. But that's exactly what that feels like to me. Those characters that are just over the top with all the pickup lines, and then when they don't bite, it's like, yeah, well, you know, you must be frigid, or yeah, you must be this, or you must be that, and they move on to the next one with all their smarminess, because they just played those so well in movies from back in the day. I mean, I'm constantly dating myself on the show. It's not okay. I can pretend to be young. It's fine. But I love that it feels like that. It's just so cringy, you know, and it's cringy because there are people that exist like this, and it's awful, but hysterical at the same time. You know what? Would not be hysterical if it was me out to dinner, but it's hysterical that it was somebody else.
Worst failing.
Right? Yeah. And the worst part is that, you know, you think eventually you're going to have to breathe and let that chubby gut pop out, and your six-pack is going to look a little off-kilter. But, yeah, no, I mean, I like – real people. And I don't want to just say men, because women do it too. Not wannabes. I mean, come on. Whatever you are, own it.
Six-pack
turns into a keg.
Six-pack, at least go to a real place. Don't go buy a spray can and a stencil from Walmart. Just saying.
Yeah, no, that's not okay. So tell me about that toast that you put on the wall, because that's hysterical.
Oh, when I was telling Sky this one time, I wrote a toast to a really cool piece of vampire art, okay? It was two women, and it said, "An amazing carnal feast you did offer, a beautiful submission now almost complete. I shall drink to my own immortality. Here's to you as you die at my feet. Cheers." And then she drinks the glass of blood that she took from this chick. Well, I like the toast that I wrote so much that I wrote a 799-word poem about a vampire's birthday party. So anyway.
Well, there you go. That is awesome.
Talk about inspirational.
Huh?
Talk about inspirational.
I'm definitely not the type that writes something and then says, "Oh, this is great, let me go write something else to it." But I just love this damn toast. Cheers.
Well, sometimes awesome is just awesome.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Appreciate that.
And you got shows to push?
Well, the guys and I have a show on Saturday, me, AP, and Hatter, and the topic is a song, and I can't think of what it's called off the top of my head, about
don't,
dreaming. Please.
Don't Dream It's Over.
Oh, I love
that
song. Dream
That is the quote prompt for Saturday night. And then on Monday is Witches and Warlocks, as we step into a month full of October-ish stuff leading up into All Hallows Eve. So that's what I got.
Yes, thank you, Des. All right, that brings us to you, Wayne.
Right. So when I saw the title of the show tonight, you know, I made my alliterations. I had to go crazy with the alliterations. So I hope everybody's entertained tonight, this evening.
Okay, you're on the board, and I'll click play. Give me one second. Here we go.
Hello. Is everyone entertained this evening? I hope everybody enjoys my engagement with Eve. I see the educated expressions escaping your eyes. This is called Exactly E. Every E enables each entry to elaborate exclusively. In early eons of existence, E's empowered immigration, encompassing economic essentials for the environment. Without E's, even excessive errors escape evaluation. To examine E's effectiveness, entitlement must enact engineering. By engaging E's exclusively, enormous endeavors exist. E's are epic, except enhancing E when entities excessively. In reach E's, expect exclusive economic events to evolve. In?
Shout out, Wayne.
End.
Count on Wayne to go a little over the top there, huh?
Wow. It's about embellishment.
Hey, Wayne for president. you have a press secretary write that for you, Wayne?
That was great. That was great, dude.
Oh, my God. And a perfect choice of music. Oh, sweet Jesus. That was phenomenal. I like that. AP, what'd you think?
I was trying to come up with too many E words to actually describe that. It's funny how some of those lines really work, especially in that last stanza. To examine E's effectiveness, entitlement must enact engineering. enriched ease, expect exclusive economic events to evolve. They really work. I wish I could understand why, but they really do, right? And well written.
That makes sense.
Awesome. Awesome. Hatter, what'd you think? Hatter?
Unmuted. Yeah, it was enormously entertaining. That guy actually didn't
think about. Thank you.
Did Deb drop?
Yes.
And Sweet?
No, I'm still here. I'm just trying to evaluate. I'm trying to evaluate. I don't understand how this works.
Easy.
Really, I just, yeah. I love this. It's just gorgeous and unexpected and exhilarating and all those wonderful things. But yeah, epic and enhancing evil. And I can't even say it. You just, I shall bow to you. That's all I can say. I love it.
Thank you.
I'm pretty brave.
You know why I think that this works so well, besides the fact that there are like an exorbitant number of E words that, so you don't feel like you're missing prepositions and you don't feel like you're missing anything in it, is that it doesn't rhyme. A lot of people that use a lot of alliteration in a piece, they tend to rhyme, which makes it seem a little bit choppy. And these are just full-on flipping sentences. I mean, without ease, even excessive errors escape evaluation. Well, this is true. You know, so this is all true and it's all fabulous. And it doesn't sound, maybe because it's a soft E and it's not like a hard consonant sound. So if it was all T's or all like CH's, it would sound different. But because it's a soft vowel and it doesn't rhyme, it just flows wonderfully. It really, really does. I mean, from the very beginning, is everyone entertained this evening? I mean, there's nothing wrong with that sentence. That's a fabulous question, a fabulous way to start a party. It's wonderful. And so I this is probably my favorite alliteration poem that I've ever like had the pleasure of hearing, simply because of that exact thing, that it just has this kind of effortless flow. So excellent job, my dear.
It's because you're not illiterate.
This is true.
Either.
Wayne, you didn't sneak out and become a host anywhere, so you got no shows to push?
Nope. I can figure to read mine.
Yes, sir. We'll put Hatter up next.
Sure.
All right.
One second. Here we go. You are on the board.
Maybe I should have mentioned. Everybody got it?
Yes.
Away from me.
Maybe I should have mentioned the world I did not save. I just happened to be there digging my one and only grave. Maybe I should have been clearer about what I do. The last thing I wanted was to offend you, too. Did you hear I stopped the warming? Our planet is safe as can be. So cut down all the forests. Don't leave one single tree. Was it you I told how I can't grow old? And time is an old friend of mine. Maybe it's the stage where I turn the page and find the grand design. Maybe I should have carried the secret that you told me. You can trust me with anything. Your secrets are safe with me. Did you know I was a poet, a wordsmith by trade? I write in riddles so you might find the words I cannot say.
I love that. That's awesome. The sense of self in that too is great. But the words, that works great for tonight. And the fact that you worked in your most famous words you cannot say was appropriate too.
that in itself for tonight's theme is fantastic too. But you know, that could probably be its own prompt. Great piece, Hatter. Sweet piece.
Thank you.
Well, first and foremost, I've got to say that Hatter always amazes me with his rights. So this is no exception. And my computer just jumped. I'm sorry. Let me go back to where I was.
Did you goose it?
If I goosed it, it would do more than jump. That was weird.
It must have been pretty bird.
Yeah.
She's a goose.
I love the whole first stanza about the world I did not save. I just happened to be there digging my one and only grave. So the whole idea of talking about where you're going to go and what you think of yourself, it starts off as very emotional. The whole poem is emotional. But since we're talking about embellishment and feelings and emotion, how would the reader, like, you're writing this and you're talking about yourself and the mood you're in. And the one thing we haven't really talked about is how we write with our own moods, how we feel, whether we're depressed or we're happy or we're sad or we're in pain, and how that plays out to the people that are reading it. So when we, like, absorb our emotions into a poem, how is that not embellishment, but that weaving and that embroidering of words affect the people that are reading it? And I think that a lot of us have that ability to say, let me share my pain, let me share how I feel, as we go ahead and write and weave these tapestries of words into our work and into our poems, and they go out into the world and they affect so many people and they can help so many people. And I think, Hatter, you're one of the best at doing that because your emotions are always so raw and real on the page. And I think it's just a prime example of that.
I'm an angry poet.
Okay. You're an angry poet.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you.
AP, do you think he's an angry poet, AP?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think Hatter is a person who he finds truths and puts them on a page, and in the words of Percy Bysshe Shelley, a poet is a nightingale who sits in darkness and sings to cheer its own solitudes with sweet sounds. And I think that's exactly what Hatter does.
Excellent comment. And Wayne?
Well, it's a wonderful poem. Did you hear I stopped warming? Our planet is safe as can be. You are the man. That's exaggerated a little bit. That's what I said a little bit, but you're the man. Was it you that I told you that I can't grow old and time is no friend of mine? Well, whoever it was, I was lying. Hey, you are a good poet, and a fine poet at that. You know, you did a good job with this. I like it.
Thanks, Wayne.
Pretty bird.
So maybe it's just me because I tend to read things kind of, you know, not like normal people. But it's like it's wonderfully snarky, you know, like it's facetious. And then when you get, you know, with the, you know, stopping of the global warming and never growing old and you know, and which I love because you got to love the humor in that. But then you get to the next to last stanza where it says, maybe I should have carried that secret you told, that secret that you told me. You can trust me with anything. Your secrets are safe with me. And I can't tell because it'll read like two different pieces, if that too is snarky because you told everybody, or that's where you go honest because, yeah, there's sarcasm here, and here's some truth for you. And I kind of love that I can see both of that. Not sure which way you meant it, but I they're both there, and I find that to be quite lovely. And that last stanza is
is wistful. And you do wistful very, very well. And I like it when it kind of comes at the end like this, where you have whatever is going on for the rest of the poem, you always end it with that little wistful piece. And then it's like, oh. And it lingers. And without that little wistfulness, it's still a good poem, but it doesn't squeeze the heart. And so I kind of love that. And you go back to your song a lot, you know, the words I cannot say, and it's that may make it way more for me, because we've all suffered through not being able to express ourselves, regardless of our vast vocabularies and how colorful we can write. Sometimes in person, in the moment, when you're overcome with emotions, you can't find the words. It doesn't, you fall all over your tongue. And then the moments pass and you're all in the coulda, woulda, shoulda. And then years go by and it's, I wish, I wish, I wish. And then if you get another chance to, you're still back in the emotions where your tongue doesn't work. So I kind of love that it feels like that to me at the end, but it's so wonderfully facetious throughout this whole entire thing that it caught me off guard, which I love a good twist. I love a good twist that I don't see coming. So this is very enjoyable.
Thank you for your version. Yeah, it isn't. Doesn't everybody have those words that you just can't say, whatever it is?
They do.
Well, that's just,
or a person you just can't say them to.
Yeah, I think that's why we love that line so much, because it's so relatable. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, thank you for that, by the way. I was just going to say that I think a lot of poets at some point, whether it's what gets them started or they just pepper it throughout, that, you know, we got to put it somewhere. We got to say it to someone. Even if the person that it's intended to never reads it, it's there. And so it's real. And so it impacts creativity and how we art and how we infuse our emotions into words. So yeah, absolutely.
Beautiful. Thank you.
And Pretty Bird.
Yeah.
Put you up next?
Sure. A or B?
Oh, B, definitely.
Okay. That's Hemingway. You're good with that one? Here we go.
I'm good with that.
All right. And I'm going to put Jay up next. He needs a reader. So, gentlemen, somebody volunteer, please. Okay.
Great.
Oh, awesome. All right. This is Hemingway Hijacked My Calligraphy. And it goes like this. Pens and swords and time heals all, but life isn't a sitcom that resolves in 24 and a half minutes. The blood in my ink coagulates on regurgitated words that burn truth into the lies they spun out of denial, all the while looking for the spirits to calm the witch or the devil that wants his due, but what has he done but spit in my eye? Words evaporate before hitting the page, and I squeeze the bladder that pours through the tip that was meant to show me inside out. It showers me in acid rain sprays that try to bleach me into position, but I cannot contort into anything but my lazy, nonconformist ways. Liquid courage, liquid treasure, liquid pleasure, liquid hangover afternoons that taste like I ate a carcass as my last meal. There isn't enough alcohol to blind me to the reflection of flayed emotion I leave in my wake at every sunrise curtain call. My murderous eyes paint time in lines that cackle and frowns that carry too generous amounts of pain, disdain, and disappointment. Verses turn fragmented lies in bad grammar and words that pretend to be sentences with no structure. I dig the fountain pen through the paper of my eyes, hoping this time the words will stick and someone somewhere will hear them scream. Clawing through my cheeks, bleeding lines in truth that looks like bad stitches and a puke bucket by the bed. My tongue slices in rusty blades where a tetanus would be a reprieve from the truth I sling like ninja stars unseen.
I read Hemingway and hate it, but it turns up in my broken thoughts and inability to escape broken perception. I read Bukowski and Flip Off the World and Fireball, a Patron. Yes, tonight it is the Patron in chrome that soothes the soul, if not quiets the mind. But if my pen bleeds invisible words and I forgot how to write through all the typing, then how am I to say screw you in intelligible gibberish? Farewell, Inkwell Blues, and hello, black lines of misconstrued regret and angles that make me remember I forgot how to use a protractor. The light above the reading chair flickers on, and the open bottle remains so. One shot to 15, but who's counting by yourself? Hand lettering my love and calligraphy on a heart requires to pass by feelings in slow waves weighed down by a shot glass blurring fragments into truth. And poem.
Wow. I love this because for me, it's so layered. Hemingway and his legendary alcoholism is just the tip of the iceberg for something like this for me. You touch on so many different thoughts, and you even managed to get Bukowski thrown in there for good measure. And the things people say and the way that they take them sometimes. And you talk about liquid courage in a way that, you know, is it inspirational or is it revealing? The whole thing is just brilliant. I loved all the different nuances to what you put to this, you know. And again, it all comes back to the word choices and the way that you say it. You're wielding sarcasm and truth into embroidery. And I really enjoy something like this. I really love the way you did this. This is brilliant. AP, what'd you think?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think the whole process of how sort of words get on a piece of paper and how the muse sort of appears and what sort of frame they're in and how we actually go about it. Is sort of an amazing subject, and that's what, to me, this piece is all about. And I don't think about it that much, to be honest. I just bypass it most of the time because I just try to get words on a page incredibly quickly and do it while the muse is in the house and just thank God that there's a muse there that I can write to and with, and that they're not leaving me lonely. So but this is it's a really interesting description of how those words get there and how they're prompted and really well written.
Thank you. Just for the record, I don't drink.
Jose Cuervo's not a friend of yours.
No, I mean, if I'm going to go tequila, it will be Patron Silver, but I don't.
Hatter, what'd you think?
You mentioned eyes several times, I believe. Is this a self, evaluating, what do they call it when you put yourself down? What's the word?
Self-deprecating. No, this one isn't really about me. It was just, to the prompt, and there goes my dog being a menace.
Because you got great lines in here. I read Hemingway and hated it.
Well, that's true.
But it turns out an ability to escape broken perception. Very deep lines all the way through this. You took it there with the twine, with the cheeks, blood, bleeding lines, bad stitches and puke buckets, but you drug us all the way through with the next line. My tongue slices and rusty blades. Not or tetanus would be a reprieve. Very heavy lines. Very good.
Thank you so much.
Sweet. Can you comment for Pretty Bird?
Oh. To comment for Pretty Bird would take about 3 hours and a good restaurant and maybe some of that great tequila. But this is a masterpiece. I really enjoyed it.
from hating Hemingway to Bukowski, and I just think there's a sarcasm in there that is quite wonderful coming from her. There's a depth to this too about writing and it eating the inside of our souls if we don't just put it out there on paper. And it doesn't matter how we put it on paper, whether it's through our pen or the typewriter or on a piece of freaking napkin that has our spittle all over it. We write because we are, and it doesn't matter how it comes out. It will come out. And that's simply the way it is. And I love this piece of yours, my dear.
Thank you.
Wayne, you get the last comment.
Well, all right. That is one sick pen you have there. Not enough alcohol. Ever try codeine? I mean, neither. The way to say screw you is go get, I don't know better to say that word, but I think you should sing for this masterpiece. And I really like the line, angles that make me remember I forgot how to use a protractor. I forgot I remembered once, or was it twice? I can't remember. Well, I got to go. It's one shot to 15. Bottom bedtime.
At least you didn't gouge your eyes out with a calligraphy pen.
This is true.
I guess we got Jay up next.
Yep, he's on the board.
Okie doke. Well, let me get to it and read then, if this goes fast. So this is JCA, Embroidery of the Black Widow. It goes a little bit like this. Click the clock, the spindle web, ring the physician, pronounce him dead. Collect the insurance on strychnine fee, cremate the bones with arsenic tea. Gunpowder fingers, diamond rings sold, widow is thirsty while husbands turn cold. Coffins in the cellar, bodies in lakes, men march to graves. Take grief at the wakes. Eyes draw to sugar, Adam to Eve, chew from the apple, snared in the weave. Clock chimes at 30, the newspaper read, next man in the parlour, step in the Black Widow's web. Ping pong.
Wow. So this feels like an exaggeration of how prolific a serial killer might be. I'm not entirely sure, but you know, he's got lovely descriptions of the bodies in this woman's wake, or people, these women, if it's more than one person, maybe a category of people, the Black Widows in general. I don't know. It's a lot of food for thought, a lot of carnage and Octoberism. It sounds like it's a premiere for your show, sweet.
Absolutely.
So the what is it, the coming attraction reel has been played. what did you think, sweet?
Oh, I think it's brilliant. I think it's scary as hell. I cannot wait to see what else he has to say. I don't believe there's any embellishment in there. I think it's a straight up truthful. Here's what we're going. This is what she did. Be very, very afraid.
Arsenic tea and bodies in the lake.
Yep.
What about you, AP? What'd you think?
Yeah, pretty neatly rhymed. And got lovely rhythm and alliteration. It just short line rhyme. It's a real art to get it right. And JC has done it really well here.
Great comment. How about you, Wayne? What'd you think?
Well, excuse me. I said about the same thing. I said, let's read those smoothly. The three and four and 1 6 line word lines are great. Work perfect flow and great rhyme, and it's extremely entertaining. I'm kind of caught in the web. I think it's a great point. Good job.
Hatter, can you comment for Jay?
Yeah, I agree with AP. The short rhyme, short line rhyme, has got to be right. There's little wiggle room for the cadence, and JC did a very good job.
And Pretty Bird.
I think this is a wonderful prelude to spooky season in general, which is my favorite time of year. Well, it's running a very close second to Christmas because I'm still that girl. But I love spooky season, and women are sinister, you know. It's not so much crimes of passion. These are very much deliberate and dehumanizing and just god-awful. These women are sinister, just full-on sinister. So I love this piece. It is, I mean, as a prelude of what's coming Sunday, it makes me want to just write for it and be there, because what's a little murder and mayhem? It's perfect for freaking October. So yay.
That sounds like a lot of murder and mayhem to me. Excellent. Did we deplete the field pretty much?
You've got a second one up. I've got a second one. You've got a second one. I've got a second one. And Sleep's got a second one.
Awesome. How are we doing on time? What do we got?
20 minutes, I think. Hold on a second. Let me see. Yeah, we have 20 minutes exactly.
Cool. All right. I guess it brought my audio.
Absolutely. Okay, Wayne said goodnight on the board.
AP, if you want to find a second one, too.
Okay. Are you ready, Rack?
Go ahead.
Here we go.
Words Worth by Raconteur. I live in solitude, wrapped in darkness and silence. Mine are the rantings of an overclocked mind. Your eyes are the only thing to impart life to my words and lend a voice to any truth within them you find. Stripping me of my armor, tearing down my walls, reminding me what it means to be alive, inspiring me to grab the world by the balls. Careening headlong into the unknown, soaring higher with every breath, until the world becomes bored with my words and I fall to certain death. I continue to bleed emotions onto the page, pondering which is the more poetic demise, exsanguination or plummeting to earth, waiting for the inevitable. I have every tick of the clock to agonize. Like a tree that falls in the forest, if there's no one to hear what I have to say, there's no reason to worry about tomorrow. It'll be as if I never existed anyway. End poem.
You know, there is both beauty and sadness in this. There's something to be said for that first stanza. You know, it's the magic of poetry. It's whatever, if you read it, once you write it, it belongs to everybody who will ever read it. And once they read it, they'll either take it to heart, attach it to something they felt, ponder it in some kind of way that has nothing to do with why or when or whatever you wrote it. And I absolutely love that. And I love how it goes into that you write naked, not naked clothing, naked emotions. And it's it's a beautiful thing. So it can be a very exciting thing, you know. It gives you a sense of purpose. And then you get down here to the bottom, and until the world becomes bored, well, I guess that's the middle, and with my words, and I fall to certain death. Like, if they stop reading or they no longer find value in them, then you know, why bother? And that's kind of heartbreaking to me. And at the end, it really kills me because, you know, at the end of the day, if nobody's reading them, then, you know, that's the legacy. That's the bits and pieces that are supposed to be immortalized. And what is left but nothing. And like it almost feels like the possibility of being erased. And that, A, that's scary, and B, that's heartbreaking. So, Heather, what are your thoughts? Are you muted?
Unmuted. Yep. Sorry. Yeah, unmuted. Yeah, the self examination of your own existence, I think, is can be crushing at times. We all have walls, but you described this disparity very well, Rack.
Thanks, dude.
And AP, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's interesting. I we never know who's going to read our words. They'll be there long after we are. And the vast majority of poets who become famous after they die. And so I actually see words as a legacy, and I actually see words as having an influence long past when they're uttered. And so I get the sort of futility piece of sometimes that we can think of what we do and the words, and they're just sort of passing into the air, but I think words are more important than that.
Thanks, AP.
And Sweet Pea, I need to chase my dog, so can you comment, and if you can put things on the board for a hot minute if I'm not back in time, because she is tearing up my craft.
Okay. How sad to feel unseen, unheard like a shadow attached to nothing. But I shall always be your sun, your winter and your fall, even if you think I'm not around at all.
Aw, so, thank you.
Yeah, that's there's truth to that, because there are so many times when you think you're invisible in this world, and you're definitely not invisible at all. So I can feel the sentiments of that poem very, very, very much. That's crazy and insane and all of those things in between. So, yeah, just because you think nobody's heard you doesn't mean somebody's not heard you. And I agree with what AP said, is somebody's always going to see our words long before it happens. So, AP, you're on the board, so go ahead and read your stuff.
I will. This is one from last night. This is She Stops. And it goes a little bit like this. I follow her pulled towards her stride while she prowls around a space. Even in this busy, noisy industrial kitchen with seats backed on, she's striding catwalk again, a sheer outfit placing her live body on full display, her face staring straight ahead and her manner casual while distant, questioning their presence and why they happen to be on her piece of savannah, until she stops opposite me. There is that smile, and I'm the luckiest person in the room.
in poem.
Wow. I love that. You know, when someone can make you feel that way with just a glance, that you know, kind of takes away almost everything that preceded it, because that one thought, it just carries me away. That's an amazing feeling that you put down on that page. And you know, it kind of defies the words that we're talking about, you know. Anyways, Hatter, what'd you think?
Hatter said goodnight.
Ah. What about you, Pretty Bird?
Oh, I love this. But for me, life is kind of defined by those moments, those instances, those things that stop us short, good or bad, and this is very, very good. There's something to be said about somebody that commands your attention and, you know, that they're just kind of just runs the room. And then to have her attention that, you know, she garners from others to stop and smile at you. I mean, that is a moment. And it doesn't matter if there's a relationship. It doesn't matter if there's just that moment. It's a memorable thing. It feels some kind of way. I mean, for me, the hope is, you know, that there's a thing and, you know, she's all yours. And it's that kind of knowing smile, because I love things like that. Because you know me, I'm all about the prelude to an evening. But it's I love how this shows how just a glance, just a smile can just punctuate a moment in a very stark, very deep kind of way. And it's not something that we tend to think of on a regular basis. We don't think of this look or that look. I mean, they affect us and whatever, but life goes on, things happen, mundane, whatever. You start, you know, it gets lost in you know, the daily grind. And so I love that this showcases that beautifully.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
CP.
I love this. I agree with 3P. It's that instant shock of electricity. That that moment in time where just a simple glance, be it stranger or lover, and you just get that heightened sense, that immediate, like, oh, well, there it was and there it is. And you just have that, like I said, that shock of electricity that, you know, hey, that was cool, you know. And it's between just those simple moments between now and then, or here and now, and that's all there is to. And they're just, you know, a smile or a glance or a hello, a very seductive hello with one's eyes is just incredible. Or brush by, you accidentally brush up against someone and you feel that electricity and you don't even know why.
Yeah. Thanks, Whit.
And just for the record, my sweet, you are Sweet Pea. I am Pretty Bird.
I know that.
Yeah, but you call me
why?
Sweet.
I did?
Call me, yes.
Oh, God. I do every once in a while. Only because I secretly desire you to be me, or I secretly desire to be you. it's my own problem.
I get a kick out of it, though. You're hysterical. You crack me up. And you're
yeah,
not.
I get tired.
Right?
And Pretty Bird, just for the record, it was my 6-month anniversary with Ella last night. So hello to Ella if you're listening.
Congratulations.
There you go.
That is awesome. See?
Congratulations.
I'm glad. Because, you know, I do so enjoy a prelude to an evening.
Yeah.
I'm glad you shared that moment. Thank you, AP. Sweet Pea, you could read your second one for us?
Yeah. This is, do you hear the voices between the tick-tocks of moments? Do you hear the voices between the tick-tocks of moments? Or shadows of the past vomit obscenities into virginal thoughts, leaving nothing clean to refresh the palate of another day lost, bleeding from the scars left by the talons of a monstrous rage. I still cradle the perception of forever after it's long since gone. Breaking bread at his table, violence is the virtue of grace obtained. Time bounds no one to a four-leaf clover dream. Fools we walk for a rainbow of false securities and refuses to call it death. Wave goodbye to gentle rains. Welcome to the roar of the storm. Feverish fury ignites the bite and violates the core of the moor. I bite and scratch until I have killed the demon called love. Splattered in the brain matter of vowels, I now stand still. Lying in the filth of my own lies, I hide my truth within my pride. Observe me not with your empathy or disdain. I do not walk blindly in the arrogance of my own self-inflicted shame. And I now stand alone. Do you hear the voices between the tick-tocks of moments, where shadows of the past vomit obscenities into virginal thoughts, leaving nothing clean to refresh the palate of another day lost? And home.
Wow, somehow you chose the idea of that moment also, at least to bookend beginning and end of that. I really like that, and the feelings that come in between the tick-tocks of each moment, very very poignant and relatable. AP, what'd you think?
It's sort of a heart bleeding on a page. It's hard to read. It's hard to hear when you have you're sort of violated in a way like that, and it's great to write it. It's hard to hear it.
Thank you, AP.
Pretty Bird.
You know, I tend to enjoy darker pieces of emotion, the ones that are kind of eviscerating and uncomfortable. And I love how this is bookended, because that's like my favorite way to punctuate a piece. So love that. But there's something that happens when you believe in forever. It is a hard ideal to let go of, regardless of those gouges left by a relationship that isn't working, you know? And when you get halfway through this and your fever's fury ignites and violates the core of demure, I bite and scratch until I have killed the demon called love. There is something to be said, which apparently is tonight's phrase. There's something to be said about killing your need for it, or what you defined it as, to be able to move on, to try to peel off those rose-colored glasses or those hopes and dreams, to try to get through that. But it's also we tend to hate ourselves a little bit for believing the lie, for wanting that to be the truth. And it doesn't matter how graceful we are, it doesn't matter how classy we are, sometimes we have to give the situation or the world at large the bird, curse them out, and like rip our own guts out to rebuild and move the F on. And I love the strength in this, because when you're like, oh, where is it? I do not walk blindly in the arrogance of my own self-inflicted shame and now stand alone. Because whatever the situation, whatever, there's two sides to every story, and whatever part may have fed another part, or whatever this or that, nobody's
fully innocent. Sometimes, you know, there are instances where there is, you know, whatever, but it's an empowering thing to own it. And because most people make excuses for everything else. And so I love the strength in that, because it takes a lot of strength to stand through your pain and everybody else's judgment. So there's a lot in this piece, and it twists your guts, because it is the death of dreams is what this is, and it reads so that's it's awesome. What it is to me, it's awesome.
Thank you.
And heartbreaking.
Very much.
And that leaves your second piece, and
I'm not worried about it. We're already after time, so we're good.
I think your piece needs to be read, but
you want
to do that with me?
No, if you want me to read it, I'll read it. I'm good. Nobody ever understands this, Pete, just so that you know. But that
what
is
a
not the right one. This is... My dog is full on in the garbage can.
That's not the piece, though.
She is seriously... Oh, I love her. I love her. I'm afraid to walk out of here when this is over. Be a minefield of disgust. Okay, let's see. This is "It Blinds Each Word's Experience in Not So Silent Reverie." And I wrote this to the quote that is pictured here, and it says, The form of my poem rises out of a past that so overwhelms the present with its worth and vision that I'm at a loss to explain my delusion that there exists any real links between that past and a future worthy of it." And I love this quote because, as y'all attest to, sometimes I read stuff I wrote who knows when ago. I'm like, oh, well, isn't that interesting? That's kind of awesome. Because when I write it, I don't ever think that. It's just years later when I haven't seen it for a while, I'm like, oh, not so bad. So anyway, it spoke to me. And so this is "It Blinds Each Word's Experience in Not So Silent Reverie." And it goes like this. "I was doesn't mean I am. I am doesn't mean I will be, but I was once for a time. And because I was, I know that this now isn't what it could be or what I think it should be or even what it would be if I never was that once. So I write in words that look like feelings and sound like music wrapped in sex behind low and steamy breath that lures them to or compels them through the hope of what comes next, because I was once for a time. And I know, as I'm sure they do, that this now isn't what it could be or what they think it should be or even what it would be if I never was once. Metaphorically speaking, in dreams, I can't stop dreaming of pasts that feel alive in a was that I contrived or not, or who can tell, this far removed yet still shining shadows on a future unbeseeming. So words look like a story, a truth in pain or prose where it was once and still lingers in the sultry lure of premonitions of maybe that tastes like flowers in spring. And I know now, because I was that once, that this, once written, isn't what it could be or what I think it should be or even what it would be if I never was that once." And poem.
You know, I wish we had more time, because... Or at least we had read this earlier, because we could talk about this all night. Especially to you know, the idea of embroidery of words and things like that, and looking back on what you've written and at yourself and the things that you've said, and seeing something that you didn't see the first time, or wondering, you know, or remembering where your head was at when you wrote it to begin with. I love the idea of this, and the the circularness of that thought, which so matches the quote perfectly, to try and replicate something like that, that's something that you can't paraphrase, because the minute you get one of those words wrong, you're completely out of whack and out of sequence, and it doesn't make sense. So the was and is and tomorrow and today, I just said that interplay is so eloquent and beautiful and just wonderful to me. I really love that to death. Beautiful piece, and it deserves a little more attention. I'm sorry we can't give it that much more. AP, can you comment for Pretty Bird?
No, you say that all poetry and thought was written by the Greeks, and that all we happen to be doing now is trying to discover what it was that was written 2,000 years ago, and there's truth in this piece, and so I'm going to use the quote from Pindar, the great Greek poet, who said, "Inborn of nature's wisdom is the poet's truth." And I think there's truth in the recall, and I think there's truth in this piece.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
And, BP, you get the last comment of the evening.
Well, I'm just going to take your two comments and say I 100% agree with both these men, and that's an oddity because I really agree with one man, let alone two. So that's the best comment I can give you.
Excellent. All right. I'll close out the evening saying thank you to everybody. Thank you, AP, for making this possible and presenting Human Voices on Blog Talk Radio. And thank you, everybody, that participated, hung out, contributed, and we'll be downloading this later for future enjoyment.
Thank you, guys.
Bye. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Bye, pretty good.
Good night, AP. Good night, guys.
Good night.